Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on another popular lie when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. Marriage is a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. Now, the best part about all of this is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important. It's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, 67% of all marriages here in the United States end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of that marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. In order to get our free CD package, just call us direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can go to it online if you want. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Have you ever thought about how many popular lies are going around out there? My boy oftentimes brings it up on the computer and he says, this is an urban legend. They have a name for that, urban legend. In politics, they call it spin. And so when the president's news conference is being broadcast or some segment of it on the news, they'll talk about spin. The news media uses that word spin. What that is a euphemism for lies. The president's news secretary or press secretary is going to tell us some lies in contradistinction to some other lies that some other group told us. And so the press secretary says, oh, that's not true. And so let me tell you what our side of it is. And so, you know, you get these lies. And so you and I are sitting out here wondering, well, who in the hell's telling the truth? How do you tell truth from error? So, one of the lies that I've observed over the years is the lie of, so you want a fair trial, do you? A fair trial. I remember Saddam Hussein. You remember just a couple of years ago, they were putting Saddam Hussein on trial, and I wondered at the time, and I said, now, is there any doubt in anybody's mind as to how this trial is going to come out? Is there anybody out there delusional enough to believe that he's going to be tried and found not guilty and released? No, he was going to be tried, he was going to be found guilty, and he was going to be hung. Now, that was a foregone conclusion. I never had any doubts about the final outcome of the Saddam Hussein trial. And they talked incessantly about giving Saddam Hussein his day in court and giving him a fair trial, and this is important that we give him a fair trial. He has to have this fair trial. And I thought to myself, well, what is it in people's minds that they would consider to be a fair trial? What is a fair trial? So I thought, well, from my perspective in life, and I've been in court a time or two, and I've noted the outcomes, and I teach law, and I tell my students what the probable outcome of the case is going to be based upon the input. When somebody tells me the facts of the case, I can pretty well tell how this case is going to come out. Now, in criminal cases, just to give you an illustration, in criminal cases nationwide, if you want to know what your percentage chances are of winning your case, you go down, hire an attorney, pay him good money. The attorney comes into court, and he's going to represent or defend you. And the probable outcome, 94% of the time, is that you're going to lose, you're going to be found guilty. 6% of the time, you're going to be exonerated, the case dismissed, or the jury will find you not guilty. So it's 94% guilty and 6% not guilty. Now, what's the percentage of people that are locked up in jail who are actually innocent? No, you got all these people locked up in prison. Every once in a while, you'll see a piece on 60 Minutes or 2020 or something, and They'll run a story on a guy who was actually innocent, and they finally proved that he was innocent, and they let him go after 20 years in prison. Well, how did the guy get convicted? If he was innocent, how come the jury convicted him? Why did it take 20 years to prove he was innocent? And, you know, so on and so forth. What happened to his fair trial? Wasn't he convicted on a fair trial? Well, the answer to that is 85% of prisoners who are locked up in prison are in fact guilty. They actually did the crime and they're paying their debt to society, as it's called. 15% are innocent. So if you take the number of people who are locked up in prisons today in jails, it's over 2 million. So if you take 15% of 2 million people, that's 150,000 per million, that's 300,000 people are locked up in prison here in the United States that are innocent. And I would presume that probably around the world, the system probably works about the same in your country. Now that's a lot of people. 300,000 people are locked up in jail. What happened to their fair trial? Why was it that their fair trial failed to exonerate them? What's wrong with the system of fair trial? So first of all, let's analyze this fair trial and let's see what you get when you get one of these fair trials. Here in the United States, which is held up as the exemplar of the world, we give more fair trials than anybody else in the world. We have fair trials coming out of our earballs over here. So when you're first notified that there's something amiss, you're going to receive a complaint. It could be a traffic ticket. You know, you could miss your child support payment. Something went haywire here. Something didn't gel just right. And so you get a complaint. And this complaint is styled or titled the State of Michigan versus Joe Sixpack, the State of Florida versus Sally Housewife, the State of Missouri versus George Gordon. So the first thing we note here is that it's the state that's concerned with our behavior. Do you ever notice that? It's not Tom down the street. It's not the Firestone store. It's not you know, your neighbors and your friends or anything like that. It's the state. It's the government that's got some complaint about your behavior or failure to perform or something like that. And so the complaint is styled the State of Michigan, the United States of America, or the State of California, or the people of the State of California, or something on that order. And the state comes against you with this complaint. And in the complaint, it says, well, here's what you did or you didn't do. Something that you were supposed to do and didn't, like you didn't file your tax return, or something that you did, you were driving 100 miles an hour through a school zone, or whatever it happened to be. Now, the state wants you to come in to one of their offices, and it's called a court. It's kind of like in the olden days, you used to come before the king in the king's court, and so the king would be holding court, and you'd come in there and tell your story to the king. Well, we have these courts. In England, I think it's called the king's bench. In Canada, they talk about the queen's bench or the king's bench, you see, and that's where that title or that term originates. So we come into court, and then there's a fellow in there called a judge, and you come up before this guy called the judge, who's sitting and presiding over this court on an elevated platform. He sits way up in the air over here and looks down upon you. And the court now is made up of various officers. There's a guy over there called the prosecutor, and the judge asks the prosecutor, you know, what's the complaint? And so the prosecutor says, here's what I'm complaining about. And then the judge looks at you and he asks you, you know, a few questions, you know, like what's your name and address and telephone number and how do you plead to the charges and so on. And then if this case goes to trial, there will be the policeman who's going to come in, testify against you. And here's the kicker here in the United States. We believe in fair trials to such a degree that if you can't afford a lawyer or you don't have a lawyer, here you are standing here by yourself, the judge will offer you one. I mean, at taxpayer expense, he's going to say to you, now, are you represented by counsel? And you'll say, no. Are you indigent? Well, I don't know if I'm indigent or not. Do you have enough money to afford a lawyer? No. Well, in that case, then the state, at taxpayer expense, will pay for your lawyer. We call this the public defender here in this country. We'll make sure you have a lawyer over here to represent you and take you through the process and do all those things that we believe are part and parcel with a fair trial. Now, I've never heard of an unfair trial. I've never been in court and had the judge say to them, hey, listen, we're not giving out fair trials today. That's on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This is Monday. We give out bias trials today. Don't get fair trials here today. This is kangaroo court day. You know, that law day. Well, we have kangaroo court day. I've never seen that. And the judge, you know, he's just like a doctor. He's filled with empathy for you. Like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry that this has happened and inconvenienced you and spoiled your day. Is there anything I can do to help? Let me give you a free public defender today. It's like a consolation prize, you know, after you've lost on the quiz show. Consolation prize is, and you know, he wants to give you a fair trial with a state-paid lawyer. All right, so I took a look at this, and I said, you know, something wrong with this fair trial story over here. Number one, first thing I noticed is it's the state that's bringing this action against me. Now, the state is a non-entity. I don't know if you're aware of that. There is nobody out there named Joe State. The state is an artificial entity. It's a corporation. And it's the state here that's complaining about your behavior. What did you do to the state to cause the state to want to come over here and punish you or do something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil to you? So first of all, I've never been able to quite identify what the damage is to the state. I mean, I could understand the state coming against you if you went out and tore up one of their stop signs. They'd come and say, hey, this guy broke up our stop sign. I could understand the bank coming against you. You know, if you threw a brick through their plate glass window, I could understand, you know, the Bank of America versus Joe Sixpack. This guy, Joe Sixpack, threw a brick through our plate glass window and we want him to pay for that. That would make all the sense in the world, but I never could figure out quite how the state comes into the game over here. Now, there's another factor. This court that you're going to, this is a building which is built by the state. It's built by taxpayer dollars, and this courthouse down here is the state's courthouse. This is the state's courtroom. And then there's another factor in here. The state makes the rules by which this court works. There's rules of criminal procedure and rules of civil procedure, and it's the state that makes these rules. It's not, you know, it's not you. You're not making these rules. I'm not making the rule. Whatever this thing called the state is, they're the guys that are making the rules, and they got the rule book, and you have to follow their rules. So I wondered, are these rules really fair to Joe Sixpack, or are they kind of more fair for the state? Now, who's paying for this? Well, the state comes in here, and then the state brings the action, so it's the state that is your protagonist, isn't it? And then they bring you in front of the judge, and this judge over here is working for who? Who's this guy getting paid for? Every Friday he picks up a check. Who's signing the check? And come to find out, it's the state of Michigan signing this guy's check. And then this prosecutor over here, you know, he says, I'm going to put you away for 30 years. You dirty speeder, you red light runner, you, I'm going to throw the book at you. And I wondered, well, who's paying this prosecutor's salary every Friday? And come to find out, it was the state. The state done it. So we got the state bringing an action against you. We got the state making the rules. They bring you into the state's courtroom. They pay the judge. It's the state that's paying the prosecutor. Now they need witnesses against you, so they bring in the policeman, the building inspector, the tax collector. Well, excuse me, who's paying the salary here of the policeman, the tax collector, or the building inspector? And come to find out, here's the state again. The state. The state's paying for the witnesses that they're bringing up against you over here. See? I wondered, are these witnesses unbiased, just average Joe Sixpacks reporting what it was they saw, they heard, and they know? You know, when you have a traffic accident out here, you know, the insurance company told me, well, you should go get names and addresses of the people that are the bystanders around here, you know. So you go over and you say, hey, you, did you see this accident? Oh, yeah, I did. Hey, what's your name and address? I'm the guy in the green car. And you get names and addresses, and these guys come in and testify. Well, what'd you see? Was the light red or was the light green? You know, where were you standing? These are unbiased witnesses. These are just bystanders. But I noticed that when the building inspector comes in to testify against you, or the tax collector, these guys aren't unbiased witnesses. These guys are getting paid by the complaining party. You know, kind of like, you know, kind of like your neighbor Bob over here is suing you because you built the fence 2 feet over on his side of the line. And he's suing you, and he wants you to remove this fence over here. So he brings in his wife, and he brings in his son and daughter, and so on. They're all testifying against you. That makes all the sense in the world. You know, it's their fence, and it's their lot, and it's their land, and you put your fence across on their side, and so they're testifying against you. I thought, well, isn't that kind of the way it is when you got the policeman, the tax collector, or the state's hired agent coming in here testifying against you? Doesn't seem to be very fair. Doesn't seem to be very unbiased to me. Then the judge says, hey, listen, maybe you don't understand the way things are coming down here, and we want you to be adequately represented in here, so we're going to hire a lawyer for you. Now, this lawyer isn't somebody that you choose. It isn't that you say, well, good, thank you very much. I'd like F. Lee Bailey or Johnny Cochran to represent me. No. I mean, you don't get to pick the lawyer. It's the state that picks the lawyer for you. And this lawyer comes from a pool of lawyers called public defenders. Public defenders. These are the people who graduated from law school in the bottom half of their class. These are the people who are the least competent in the legal profession. If they had any smarts, they'd be working for General Motors, preparing their bankruptcy petition, getting paid $100,000, $200,000 a year. No. These guys graduated in the bottom half of their class. These are the people that couldn't get a job anyplace else, so they went to work for the public defender's office in Kansas City. These are the lawyers that can't tie their shoes. That's why they wear slip-ons. All right, now this guy's going to come in. He's going to represent you. See, now the question arises, well, who's paying this guy? Well, it's the state. And who licenses this guy to practice law? Again, it's the state. Well, what if he comes in there and he displeases the state? Well, he'd get disbarred. Well, if he got disbarred, who'd pay him? Nobody, because he's from the bottom half of his class, and the state's ticked off at him, and now they won't pay him. So this public defender that comes in here, you know, he's getting paid by the very party that's complaining about your behavior. Let's take stock of where we're at here. You're being complained about by party plaintiff, and the party plaintiff is the state of Michigan. And the state of Michigan says, we want to give you a fair trial. So come on down to our courthouse, and we're going to give you this fair trial based upon our rules in front of our judge, prosecuted by our prosecutor. And just to make things real easy for you, we'll bring in our witnesses to testify against you. And then just to make sure that everything's on the up and up, we'll let you have our lawyer to represent you. Now, let me put this out here in a little better prose. Now, we all know that that's a fair trial, don't we? Now, we learned that. We got that picked up, you know, from Mrs. Sorensen in the first grade. And surely by Mrs. Wiles in the third grade, you understood the fair trial principle here. But listen, let's suppose that you came down here to the law school. Now, where you get off the highway out here and come down my road over here, there's a gate. And then you come through the gate, and it's a quarter of a mile down here. So you need my license. You need my permission to drive across my land on my road, and so you need my license. So let's suppose that I'm going to give you my license to drive across my road, or drive down my road across my property. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, you displease me. I'm displeased about the way you're driving your car down my road. And so I have my son Joe come out and stop you and write up a piece of paper on a 3x5 card that expresses George Gordon's displeasure with your driving down my road. And you ask my son Joe, well, what does this mean? It means that we're going to prosecute you in the Gordon Court of Justice. And in case you don't know what that means is, we're going to haul you in here to George Gordon's office, and he's going to preside as the judge. Now, maybe you're a little bit confused here, and you don't understand the Gordon Court of Justice. Well, the Gordon Court of Justice is made up of the interested parties here that control, own, and operate the Gordon Ranch. And so I inform you here, when you get into the Gordon Court of Justice, that I'm Judge George, and I'm here to dispense justice because I'm displeased about the way you're driving down my road. And you say, well, I don't understand this process. Well, you don't need to. We write the rules right here ourselves. Yeah, we write the rules for the Gordon Court of Justice right here in the Gordon Court of Justice, Judge George presiding. Now, I'm going to have my wife come in here and prosecute you because I'm displeased with the way you're driving down my road. So I'll have my wife prosecute you. Now, listen. In addition to this, we need some witnesses against you. So I'm going to bring in three of my grandchildren who are out here sitting on the bullpen fence watching you drive down my road, which is why I'm displeased, and they'll testify against you. And then, you know, just to make sure that you get a fair trial here in the Gordon Court of Justice, I'm going to have my daughter Elaine represent you. Now, let's see where we're at here. I've got my own court. I'm presiding over it. I make the rules. I got you here on my turf. My wife is prosecuting you, my daughter is defending you, and three of my children are witnessing against you. Would you call that a fair trial? Now, if you wouldn't call that a fair trial, then why would you call this charade that we call a fair trial down here at the county courthouse a fair trial? I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration so that you could see another popular lie. Now, there's a lot of these popular lies out here in our society. I mean, there's things that are going on around us all the time, you know, day in and day out. I'd see them on the news every night. You see it when you go to the doctor's office, you witness it when you're in the dentist's chair, you see all these things going on, and we kind of take them because, you know, this is the way things are run. But just because this is the way things are run, does that mean that that's the right way or the fair way or that's good for you out here in the real world? All right, so there's a fair trial for you. Now, there's another thing that's going on out here that I was kind of concerned about. A guy comes up and knocks on my door, and you open the door and you say, howdy. And the guy says, do you know Jesus? Now, that actually happened to me one time. There was a couple of young fellas from the Mormon church. God love them. They wanted to save me. I didn't know that I needed saving because I didn't know that I was in any trouble. But they informed me that I was in deep doo-doo and that I needed salvation. And they wanted to know if I knew Jesus. And I asked the leader there. I said, I don't believe I do. Does he live here in the neighborhood? And he looked at his partner like, can this guy be for real? So I invited him in the house to have a drink. It was a hot day in July. And we had a conversation. In that conversation, it came to my attention that if you're not a Mormon, you are going to hell. And so I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, how many Mormons are there in the world? And the answer is 12 million. 12 million Mormons in the world. And I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, how many other people are there in the world? And somebody told me, 6.5 billion. And I said, God, that's a big number, 6.5 billion people in the world. To count that high, I'd have to take my shoes off. But you can trust me, I tested this out. I asked my boy Dirk, I said, how many people are 6.5 billion? He said, well, there's 1,000 million in a billion, so that's 6,500 million people. So I thought, well, I can write down 6,500, and then I'll just write the word million behind it. All right, now, how many Mormons are there? Well, there's 12 million. So I put a 12 underneath that 6,500, 12 million. Then I put a line under that. Now, we're going to subtract 12 million from 6,500 million. I want to find out, you know, give me an idea how many Mormons there are compared to everybody else in the world, because if you're not a Mormon, you're going to hell. So I wanted to figure out how many people are going to go to hell. So I took 2 from 0, that's 8, and then I took 1 from 9, that's 8. And then that leaves me with a 4, and then that leaves me with a 6. So that's 6,488 million remainder. I know this is higher math for most of you people out there, but I ran this through my Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instrument Calculator just to make sure that my fingers and toes all counted up to the same thing. So you take 6,488 million. And now what we're going to do here is we're going to take 12. See, 12, that's 12 million. We're going to divide that by 6,488, and that's going to give us a percentage number here. So if Mrs. Wiles did her job in the third grade, we should come up with an answer here. So I'm going to divide that by 6,488. And oh my God, I look at the display and I'm in absolute shock. It says 0.00184958. Now what that translates into, that's not very many people are going to go to heaven. That's what that means. That means your chances of going to heaven are 0.00, it's worse than that, it's 0.0018. What that really means, you know, if you're sitting on the bar smoking a Marlboro, drinking a Bud Light, what that means is your chances of going to heaven are about as good as finding a mouthful of teeth in a hen. All right. So I got to thinking about that for a minute, and I said, well, I'm not one of them Mormons, and so I ain't going to heaven. So I got to mulling that over, and I said, boy, I better get on the bandwagon here in a hurry. And then I asked this kid, I said, what do I have to do to become a Mormon because I don't want to go to hell? And he said, you got to read the Book of Mormon, and you got to come to church and give us 10%. And, you know, you can buy your way out of this. You know, if push ever comes to shove, you know, get your checkbook out. Well, anyway, not to disparage the Mormons over here, I was sitting here in the house one morning. And I went out to milk the cows on a Saturday morning. Went out to milk the cow, and there was a guy standing out here in my front yard. Now, it's hotter than a blue blaze as hell at 10:30 in the morning in the middle of July. And this guy's dressed up in a suit and tie carrying an attaché case. And I couldn't make up my mind as to whether he was an IRS agent or an FBI man, but I knew he was important because of the way he was dressed. And so I said, well, sir, you've come a long way up here. I looked out in the driveway, and I didn't see his car. And I said, is your car down on Newman Slope? He said, yep. And I said, two-wheel drive, ain't it? And he said, yep. And I said, yeah, you can't get in here with two-wheel drive. And you walked it for a piece. He said, yep. Now, Newman Slope from the house is down here about a half mile. So here it is, hotter than a blue blaze as hell, and this old boy walks up here half a mile. I said, boy, you must want to talk to me in the worst way. And he said, yep. So I could tell right away a man dressed in a business suit and the blue blaze as hell are shining down from heaven upon him. He's carrying an attaché case wearing a necktie after having walked a half a mile from Newman Slope up here to the house. I said, boy, this must be important. He said, yep. And I said, how important is this? He says, well, it's life and death. And I said, well, let me milk the cow first, mull this over. You sit down here in the air-conditioned office, the classroom, and read some books, and I'll be right back. So I went out, milked the cow, came back in. I said, well, since this is a matter of life and death, what do you think the problem is? And he said, you need to be saved, brother. And I said, thank you. Glad you're concerned about me. What do I need to do? He says, you need to repent. And I said, who are you from? He said, the Jehovah's Witnesses, and we're here to save you. Well, he didn't put it exactly in those words, but, you know, that was the essential essence of the program. So while you're mulling that over, let me give you a reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. And the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give out, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans in their viewpoint. May not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, though, are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, where you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about another popular lie. Now, I wouldn't call this Jehovah's Witness a liar or a Mormon a liar, and I'm not getting off out here on a limb. I just want to point out that that was the lead up to the scenario. I don't know how many Jehovah's Witnesses there are, but it's my understanding that there's fewer of those Jehovah's Witnesses than there are Mormons. So, again, we got into a conversation, you know, like, why are you here? And he said, I'm here to save you. And if you're not a Jehovah's Witness, you're going right straight to hell. And I said, oh, my God, I heard that story once before. If I'm not a Mormon, I'm going straight to hell. If I'm not a JW, I'm going straight to hell. I was beginning to get depressed, wondering, well, what in hell am I going to do? Should I join the JWs to be saved, or should I join the Mormons to be saved? And then I got to thinking about this a little bit, and before I made up my mind, one time when I was a youngster, about 12, 13, 14 years old, I used to deliver newspapers, and down at the Eureka Theater in Eureka, California, is where the route manager would come by and drop off our papers. And so it was a very popular place to roll your papers because, you know, a lot of us didn't have paper routes right there where we lived, and so we'd ride our bicycles down to pick up our papers at the Eureka Theater, which had a place out of the rain. And you could sit inside this covered area where you went into the Eureka Theater, and it was covered and it was dry, and we would roll our papers there. And so here's all of us guys sitting here rolling our papers and talking, you know, and thinking, it takes about half an hour to roll your papers. So for half an hour, you're sitting here rolling your papers and talking to the guys, and one day the subject matter came up in church, and so Ed O'Neill said, if you're not a Catholic, you're going straight to hell, because the Catholic Church is the biggest church in the world, and they've got the truth, and all the rest of you Protestants out there are a bunch of gooks and a bunch of dummies, and you're all going to hell. And so I noted that down right away. I said, uh-oh, I'm not a Catholic, so it looks like I'm dead on arrival. David Wagner is sitting there. Now, he was a Nazarene. I'm not quite sure what a Nazarene is, but I've seen Nazarene churches around from time to time, and he was one of them guys. I don't know how many of those guys there are, Nazarene. But Catholics, there's a bunch of them. Last time I heard a number, there was a billion of those Catholics. So let's start thinking about these Catholics for a minute, because Ed O'Neill sounds like to me that he's on safer ground than either the Mormons or the JWs. You know, a billion, that's a bunch more than 12 million Mormons, and so I put that down here on my paper. If you got 6,500 million people in the world, and 1,000 million people are Catholics, that means that 5,500 million non-Catholics are all going to hell. All of a sudden, I could see right away that my chances of salvation were greatly improved by joining the Catholic Church. Because Ed O'Neill, he pointed out very succinctly that he got it straight from the priest. I mean, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straight out, straw hat. He got the information straight from his priest. If you ain't a Catholic, you're going to hell. And I knew that that was important information. Now, David Wagner said, no, you got that wrong, Ed. You have to be a Nazarene. See, if you're not a Nazarene, you're going to go to hell. And so I was curious about how many Nazarenes there were, but there wasn't anybody there that knew. And so they must be a little small sect over here that nobody knows much about. I didn't know much about them. Of course, I'm only 12, 13 years old. I wasn't a real authority on Nazarenes when I was 12 or 13. And now that I'm 70, I still don't know much more about them. But I could see here that there was a pattern evolving. There's a pattern here. So Mike Lyons is sitting over there, and he says, no, you guys are all screwy. You got to be a Baptist. I said, Baptist? How many Baptists are there? Well, there's 14 million Baptists. Well, 14, that's 2 million more than Mormons. You know, they only got 12 million. The Baptists got 14 million. We don't know how many JWs or Nazarenes there are, but we know that there's 1,000 billion Catholics. You know, I was about to throw my lot in with the Catholics here, just listening to the numbers. Well, come to find out, if you're not a Baptist, you're going right straight to hell. Now, I can see the pattern clearly emerging here. So, if you're a Baptist, you guys are all going to go to heaven, but everybody else is going to go to hell. And everybody seems to hold the same view. I never saw anybody in here said, well, you could be a Baptist, a Mormon, or something else. Now, relying upon my own personal experience, you know, I had a little input to put in here, too. See, I'd been to catechism myself. I'm not a total novice now. See, I've been trained in religion. I went to catechism in the Lutheran church. And not just any Lutheran church either out there, you guys. Now, listen to this. I learned my catechism from the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church. So there. And don't give me any lip. Missouri Synod. I mean, we've got a corporate charter. And so Mr. Kohler is the preacher here of the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church in 1950 or 51 or 52. I don't know exactly when, but this is in Eureka, California. Got it straight from his lips, sitting right there in the semicircle with the rest of the boys and girls. And he announced to us that unless you're a Lutheran, you're going right straight to hell. I mean, there's not even any deviation. There's none of this purgatory crap either. See, Catholics, they got an intermediate step. Before you go straight to hell, you can go to purgatory for a while, but no, not in the Missouri Synod now. By God, you know you belong to the Missouri Synod now, and you screw up, and you go right straight to hell. I mean, it's just a straight line. And there's no side roads to this process at all. Now, I just want to let you know, there's about 3.5 million of these Missouri Synod Lutherans, 3.5 million. Now, how does that stack up with 1,000 million Catholics and 6,500 million people in the world? Well, it's not very many. I mean, you know, you're looking at your display case over here, and you got this 0.00018495 68 stuff over here. See, I mean, it's not many. It's tiny. It's a small fraction. Led me to believe that God, you know, whoever this guy God is, he's a loser. God is a loser. Satan is a real winner. I mean, he's got people by the thousands of millions and billions coming down to visit him in hell. But God, he ain't got very many friends. He ain't got very many people going to heaven with him. And if he's a Lutheran, if God is a Lutheran, talk about a loser. Now, he's only got 3.5 million, but it's worse than that. It's worse than that. You see, not just every Lutheran's going to heaven either. Hey, you Lutherans out there, listen up. If you don't belong to the Missouri Synod, you're going right straight to hell. I mean, you got to have the right corporate charter, man. So God isn't just letting anybody in here. This is an exclusive club. You know, so wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, for lay people like myself, you know, just listening to the guys that ride up on their bicycles and making their announcements and pronouncements. Of course, these are kind of lay people. They're not exactly experts. I never did have a talk with the Pope, now, as to what his view is, and I never talked to the president of the Southern Conference of Baptists or somebody really important, but I did talk to two guys riding bicycles and a guy wearing a suit and tie carrying an attaché case. He was a bricklayer betrayed. And those three guys announced to me that I was going right straight to hell because I wasn't a Mormon, I wasn't a JW, and I got it straight from my preacher. Now, about the highest authority that I can quote is Pastor Kohler, who was a licensed, bona fide preacher from the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church, and he announced very plainly in catechism that if you ain't a Missouri Synod Lutheran, it's off with your head. All right. Now, I thought I'd point out some of these popular lies, because now that kind of looks peculiar to me. Because right away, my common sense says all of these guys cannot be telling the truth. Because if any one of them is, then the other five or six have to be in error, don't they? I mean, can we think that far ahead? I know you've been to public school here, son, but could we think, you know, just a little bit outside the bun here? Let's just take Ed O'Neill. Now, he's got the best argument of anybody I've ever heard. He's got 1,000 million fellow Catholics out there. We're the biggest church in the world, and therefore we're right. Well, do we believe that the majority is always right? Is the majority the final word on right and wrong? Could it be that the majority was wrong? You know, you had a bunch of Germans here in 1936, and they're all following this guy named Hitler, remember? Hey, can 50 million Germans be wrong? On the other side of the channel, you had a bunch of Englishmen over there. Can 50 million Englishmen be wrong? They were all in opposition to the Germans. Yeah. So, you know, when you get majorities of people together, they all, you know, subscribe to one view or another. Now, the majority of people here in America in the year 2000, well, from the story I got, 500 of them, more than the other half, you know. It was about half and half, the election in 2000. But 524 more of them voted for George Bush than voted for Al Gore, so therefore the majority must be right. And 4 years later, the majority voted again for George Bush. Now, I think if George Bush had been running for office the last time around, his approval rating was down around 18%, so I'm not sure he could have got elected for a third term. Didn't look too good. So majorities kind of evaporate and change. We had a majority vote for Richard Nixon, but you can't find anybody that voted for Richard Nixon. See, I put that guy in office all by myself. I just wanted the rest of you people out there to understand that, you know, when Nixon was running for office back in 72, George Gordon voted for Richard Nixon. I'm the guy that put Richard Nixon in office all by myself. Didn't take millions, just took little Georgie over here to vote for a tricky dick, because there's nobody today that would admit that they voted for Richard Nixon. I asked people, did you vote for Richard Nixon? No, I didn't vote for Richard Nixon. I just thought I'd point that out. You can't find a majority after they find out what a screw-up this guy was. All right, so with all of that in mind over here, I'll let you draw your own conclusion. I didn't come here to persuade you to join the Catholic Church, but I got to tell you that, you know, just using the numbers game, the Catholics got the better argument, in my view. So if you're betting on salvation and you're worried about going to hell, I think I'd join the Catholic Church. Now, I'm not quite sure that God, the Creator out here, is as screwed up as we give him credit for. Another thought crossed my mind, and here's what it is. Could it be that all of these people who are learning about their religious ideologies from their various and sundry church doctrines, could it be that those guys are all wrong? The Catholics are wrong, the Baptists are wrong, the Mormons are wrong, and that the real game plan does not call for sending all these people to hell because they don't belong to one or more of these churches, that maybe there's some other standards, criteria, there's some other program afoot out here. Has anybody ever thought of that? Well, I did. I got to mulling that over one night, you know, while I was laying in bed contemplating my navel, wondering about that hole in the middle of my belly here. And I said to myself, I wonder maybe God has a different plan here that we don't know about. Maybe he's got something in mind for Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, Confucianists, Shintoists, evolutionists. You know, maybe he's got a different program that we haven't thought of, haven't seen any documentation of. So I thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. In any event, my conclusion is, just looking at the facts over here, is that all these guys can't be right, but all of these guys could be wrong. Hey, mull that one over. All of these guys can't be right, because if any one of them is, then the rest of them are wrong. But all of them could be wrong, and there could be some other answer to the riddle. All right, so I'm going to leave that one right there. That's just another popular lie that I thought I'd share with you. Now, voting. Do you vote? Well, of course you vote. You know, people that don't vote are un-American, un-Canadian, un-Australian. You know, you're a terrorist. Only terrorists don't vote. I was wondering about that Osama bin Laden. I bet that guy doesn't vote, and that's what his problem in life is. You know? Because if you vote, it solves all ills. People that vote have no problems. Well, at least that's what I get from what I read. And I was reading the newsletter the other day, and then this guy was, well, I'll tell you what it was, Bob Chapman. Bob Chapman, he was bummed out about some Senate bill, see. And so he said, now you write to your senator or your representative, and you tell him how ticked off you are about this legislation that's impending. You tell him, don't vote for that. So I immediately rushed downstairs to my office, sat down in my chair, whipped out a pen and pad, and I wrote this down so that I could be sure to call Kit Bond and tell him how to vote on this impending legislation. And I got thinking about that, and I said, well, you know, there's other people out there that are writing letters to Kit Bond telling him to vote for this legislation. I mean, come on, you got this lady that's about to be, you know, confirmed to the Supreme Court, and there's people that are opposed to her, and there's people that are in favor of her. And so, depending upon which side you're on over here, you're being encouraged to write letters to your senator. And so I'm being encouraged to write letters to my senator from all of the propaganda that I read, and they're telling me, you write Kit Bond and tell him, thou shalt not vote for this Sotomayor. And then on the other side over here, you got people that are saying, oh my God, she's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. She walks on water, and so therefore we need to confirm her to the Supreme Court because God himself is behind her, and so on and so on. So, you know, I'm glad I'm not a senator, because I'd be getting all these emails and all these letters coming in, and they'd be telling me to vote no and vote yes and vote no and vote yes. And I don't know how these senators figure this out, but do they count up all their emails and say, well, we got 10,000 for and we got 10,600 against, so I guess I better vote against her? Is that the way they do that? And of course, there's all these groups and organizations out here, you know, telling their members, you know, vote this guy out and vote that guy in. So anyway, whenever I'm reading, you know, the guys that I read, they're telling me how to vote. And so I'm wondering if the Pope is sending out newsletters telling Catholics how to vote. You know, if the NAACP is sending out letters and telling their members how to vote. And if the ACLU is sending out letters telling their people how to vote. So that sends me a pretty strong signal. If you don't know how to vote and you're relying upon your think tank or your group over here to write you an email, what happens if they don't send you an email? What happens if your email gets lost? What happens if you get a virus in your computer? What happens if the mailman doesn't drop your letter off? What happens if the mailman loses your letter and you don't get your instructions from your group and they don't tell you how to vote? Can you figure it out for yourself? Just a wild new idea. Can you people out there, registered voters, come to a conclusion all by yourselves? Huh? I don't know. I rely upon my gurus to send me emails and letters and tell me how to vote. And now, I was reading my guru the other day, and he said, now, we've got to vote the bad guys out. In fact, he told me to vote for Ron Paul. And he said, no, we've got to vote all these people. Well, we've got to vote Ted Kennedy out. You people up in Massachusetts, you dummies, how come you didn't vote Ted Kennedy out? Hey, and you dummies out there in California, you know, you got that Barbara Boxer and that Dianne Feinstein. There's a couple of clowns to draw to now. How come you didn't vote them out? Well, looking at the political spectrum over here, the people in California are leftist liberal communists. So it makes all the sense in the world that they would elect two leftist liberal communist senators, doesn't it? And up in Massachusetts, those people up there are all leftists, liberals, and communists. So it would make all the sense in the world that they'd vote in Ted Kennedy and Kerry. I think that they're voting correctly. It makes all the sense in the world to me. Now, out here in the Midwest, we got a bunch of conservatives. And I can see those people voting a straight Republican ticket. You know, voting for George Bush and the rest of the gang over here called the neocons. Makes all the sense in the world. Now, you take a look around, you ask people, and they say, oh my God, the United States is on the wrong track, headed in the wrong direction, and things are really bad, and the economy's turning south, and this is really terrible, and we need to vote in for Barack Obama. So we did. We voted him in. We needed change. And so we got, well, didn't we vote out all the bad guys in the last election? You know, if you're thinking that elections solve all problems over here, I got to mulling this over a little bit, and I said, you know, we've been voting in this country for 233 years. If there's a problem out here, they tell us to vote. I remember in elections, you know, it don't make no difference how you vote. Just get out and vote. That's what they're telling me. Brian Williams said, get out and vote. Do your part. Make democracy work. Get out there and vote. He didn't tell me who to vote for. And so Brian Williams kind of left me in a lurch. I didn't know who to vote for, so I didn't vote at all because Brian didn't tell me. But he told me to vote. I was watching over in communist Russia. Hell, people take democracy seriously over there. Hell, they take dictatorships seriously. I can remember during the communist years, you know, when Joe Stalin was running Russia, they had elections over there when Joe Stalin was running. Of course, you didn't have a lot of complications there. You just had one guy to vote for, Joe. But 90% of the people got out and voted for Joe. Now, you didn't have any choices. You just had Joe to vote for, and 90% of the people voted for Joe. I got to wondering if maybe they had a law that required you to get up in the morning and go out and vote. Here in the United States, you don't have to. I mean, if you don't want to vote, you can stay home and sleep in, but not in Russia. You got to get up and go vote. We have about 60% of people here in this country that are voting. They're talking now about having a law passed, or if you don't vote, they're going to fine you. After that Nixon caper over there, I quit voting. I said, you know, I don't think this voting over here solves my problems. So I got to thinking, what would happen if the people of America ever got their political competence back? You ever stop thinking about that? What if you were politically competent? What if you were religiously competent? What if you were health competent, legally competent? I mean, you know, if people were legally competent, they wouldn't need a lawyer. If they were health competent, they wouldn't need a doctor. If people were politically competent, they wouldn't need a senator, would they? They wouldn't need a representative. I guess they could manage their own political affairs. Now, that's a wild new concept, isn't it? Well, my God, if you were politically competent, you wouldn't need to vote. Well, then voting wouldn't solve your problem, would it? Because if voting would solve your problem, you wouldn't have any problem to start with, would you? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.